Hello and welcome back to the Hulkcast and Aston Villa podcast. It turns out that Tyson Fury's heroics on the weekend were only the second best comeback of the week. Aston Villa drew 5-5 with Nottingham Forest. I'm James Rushton. That's Danny Riser. And how good was that midweek match for the neutral?
James, that was a wicked intro. What a way to introduce the show. I mean, it's been a fun week if you're a sports fan in general, hasn't it? I mean, if you're a Villa fan, especially, it's been a very, very fun week. Obviously, we're recording this on a Sunday where we've seen three derbies in the Premier League too. But back to your point, James, that 5-5 draw midweek, what can I say about that? There are so many positives and so many negatives to take out of that game, but I think it comes down to one thing. With Dean Smith, we are not going to see boring football matches. And that's what I took out of that game.
No, not at all. Villa were 2-0 down against Forest within the first 5 minutes. And I mean, comparing it back to the fight in this morning, if you're in the UK, those were more heavy knockout punches, man. No one would have got up from there, but Villa did. Villa got up and they come back into the match and they eventually took a lead before succumbing to a late equaliser. Mm. Chaos in a football match. Any way to break it down?
Look, I think it depends. I think we have to almost break this game into chunks, man. Like, let's be honest, it's really, really difficult to go goal by goal. So the opening few minutes, like, that's poor, first of all, straight away. I think it's just an example of how dodgy our defense is at the moment. And as I've said before, I don't think that any of the defenders in that team are bad defenders. You know, you look at that, you've got Alan Hutton, you've got Tanzibi, James Chester, and Neil Taylor. They're not bad defenders, but what you have got is a very, very tired team. A defense which hasn't really had much of a break. There's no real sort of motivation not to slip up. Well, you know, apart from the fact that you want the team to do well, there's no real individual motivation for it at the moment. So it's poor to see that. Onion Island as well wasn't particularly strong in between the two posts. But if we're looking at those first two goals in particular, we really need to be more solid when it comes to starting off a game.
Yeah, Villa seemed a bit mugged off and shell-shocked and concussed by the fact that Nottingham Forest, I was about to say Norwich, but Nottingham Forest are stretching the play wide, pacing the flanks through Joel Olley, Matty Cash. Again, all the stuff that I feel I highlighted on, if not this podcast, then the preview I did over at the Villa View, pace on the wings, especially some trickery and creativity, stretching the play. And they did get the best of Villa. What has to be said is that no defence is that good in this league. There is only one, and we'll come on to that, that is that good. We're all much of a muchness. They're all a bit of a mix. Even if we have James Chester, we're not the best defence. And I think that was shown. Villa didn't really have much of midfield help. Conor Hourihan right now is the defensive midfielder, and I would say he's very much the most attack-minded midfielder in the squad. So he's holding it down at the back. Of course, these things are going to happen. We're going to play the high line and we're going to get done with pace. So Villa fighting back to earn a point from that after being 2-0 down, I think, is admirable.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it's good to see that Dean Smith and his side really didn't panic at that point, because it could have been very, very easy to panic and sort of try to get as tight as possible and see if you could kind of grind out a couple more goals. But no, they went for it, and they went at Nottingham Forest, which is what you have to do if you are 2-0 down, because like it or not, like, you're at that point, really, you're either going to get thrashed or you're going to have a comeback. You know, there's no in between, because you know, if you sit back and you try to, you know, try to just see the game out at that point, you're just going to concede more, and I think that's the main thing to take out of it. Under Steve Bruce, we might have seen a little bit more of a cautious attempt at getting points back, but it was just good to see us bombing forward at that point. I thought our wingers did really well in particular at that point.
Yeah, fantastic from Villa. I think almost on the whole, a lot of sloppiness, but to fight back after every goal and eventually take the lead is massive from this Villa team. Let's talk about Joe Lolley's goal, actually. I think it was Nottingham Forest fourth or third. Either way, it put them into the lead. Fantastic hit. Do you think there's anything more Villa could have done to stop that goal?
So Joe Lolley's goal, which, as you mentioned, he's saying it's the third one that Forest scored, right? When Forest went three all? That's not right, is it?
It might be 4-3, 3-2. I don't know. I don't know the exact specifics. It's all just a mess, that game is, in terms of scoring.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember which goal that was exactly. And if I remember correctly, it was the one which Nyland could have done a lot better. Yeah, Nyland could have done a lot better there. I thought the defense stood off just a little bit. Shouldn't really have given him the attempt to, given him the chance to shoot. You know, having said that, I think Nyland really he really let himself down there. He was going in the opposite direction of that shot from Joe Lolley. Now, Joe Lolley's a fantastic, you know, technically skilled player. The defender almost moved out of the way when that ball was being hit, you know, almost trying to protect himself. It's reactionary. Unfortunately, that's what happens sometimes. Nyland, at that point, he had to steady himself. He needed to be on stable feet. But instead, he seemed to almost lose balance as he half-stepped to the wrong side, the opposite direction of which the ball was coming in. And ultimately, Joe Lolley's strike just evaded him.
Yeah, I think that's one of the best goals we've seen in the Championship this season. And we've had two ourselves. But definitely Joe Lolley's strike is one of the better goals we've seen in the Championship this season. And I wonder, on these highlight reels, are we always saying that the keeper could have done more? I certainly think in this case, yeah. But his defence in the midfield certainly didn't help their goalkeeper out at all. I think he only had about half a second when he saw. I don't know if his vision was blocked or anything by the mess of players around Lolley. He weren't really pressing or if he even saw the shot at all. It seems by the time he did, it was far too late. So when he had a chance to step up, he wasn't able to.
Well, look, it's almost very difficult to, well, you know what? It is very difficult to try and explain, you know, when you haven't got visuals. But what's happened is there's three midfielders there who all could have done a little bit better to close down Joe Lolley. He has essentially taken that shot through Jack Grealish and Glenn Whelan, I believe it was at that point. Grealish and Whelan there. I don't know if there's much more Jack Grealish could have done there. Whelan went in to meet Joe Lolley, but he just struck that perfectly, you know, in at the right time. So unless Whelan was willing to take a rocket to his thigh there, you know, it was only really expected that Joe Lolley could have struck it from there. And it was a good strike. There weren't a lot of keepers that would have saved it, but I think what a lot of fans are saying is that they would have liked to have at least seen Nyland sort of, you know, go in the right direction.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people see the angle and how close the ball is to him and are disappointed. But then again, I'd say, look how hard that shot is hit. And, you know, there's a goalkeeper going against the best goals ever scored in the history of the game. Every single goal that he scored, there's a goalkeeper that it goes past. Sometimes they didn't get into him.
No, of course.
It might be Gigi Buffon, whoever, Barthez in the France goal when Carlos smashed it in, and that bending banana kick. And there's a goalkeeper facing up against every single good shot taken, and some of them are going to go in regardless, even if it is Buffon, Barthez, those great shot stoppers in goal. So there we go.
But at the end of the day, you do still need to question the keeper after letting in five goals, and it wasn't the only goal he could have done better on. You know, you look at games and you think, you know, keepers do make mistakes. They make errors. Of course they do, because at the end of the day, when a striker hits their shot on target, it's them versus the goalkeeper. And, you know, there's always a chance the striker is going to win, and the keeper always could have done a little bit better. You know, that's the thing. But as the goalkeeper, you know, you're expected to save most of the shots which come your way.
Yeah.
And Nyland simply didn't do that. You know, I'm pretty sure that Nottingham Forest had a positive goals to shots on target ratio.
Well, it was five for five.
Well, there you go. No, it's more than positive. And it was that last goal really which did it.
We'll come on to that. We'll come on to that one now, because I think that's a better example of a goalkeeping failure. I don't think his defence helped him out, but he's beat at the near post by a pretty tame shot from Lewis Grabban. Lewis Grabban, who had a hell of a game for Forest. And yeah, he was near post shot. I feel like he could have done a lot more there, certainly, than Lolly shot. And that was a more important shot to save.
So the thing is, with something like that, yeah, you've really got to defend your near post. You know, it's almost goalkeeping 101. But the Nottingham Forest number six, I think it was Matty Cash, I'm not sure. I think he's put him off just a little bit. I think Nyland's slightly worried that Graben's going to go for the pullback. Tanzibi doesn't quite get to Graben. And ultimately, when Graben gets that shot away, it's only going in one place. Yeah, Nyland should have done better there. He should have been at the near post. But as I say, he's put off by the second man there, who ultimately Villa's defence failed to pick up as well.
So Villa had two goal scorers on the night. One was Tammy Abraham, who bagged four. Could have probably had six if he didn't have two goals disallowed, which we'll come on to. Anwar El Ghazi actually scored as well. But first, Tammy Abraham, four goals. Magnificent return. Or could he have done more? It's weird saying that, but it seems like he could have done a bit more with some of the chances he had.
No, let's be fair, man. He scored four goals in a game. You're fine. Mm. You're not going to score every shot that you take.
He may as well have. He was certainly looking that way. Four goals is a magnificent return, though. I think first half hat trick as well.
Yeah, look, amazing. I mean, I'm saying this about Tammy Abraham. Chelsea, we say this every week, but Chelsea need to keep a hold of him next season. I could genuinely see him next season being the number two behind Harry Kane. Genuinely, and I mean that with all seriousness.
I think it'd be an issue if Chelsea recall him in January.
They won't.
That seems to be a bit of a worry. Yeah, I hope they don't. There's a lot of rumblings about it, but I guess it's just hearsay because he's in form and the Chelsea strikers don't seem to be in that same vein of form. But yeah, it'd be good to have him for the whole season. I really don't think there's much stopping Villa now. And Anwar El Ghazi made a real statement for himself. He's been at the team. He came on and scored a wonderful goal. I think he had one offside as well, or disallowed for some reason.
Yeah, there was two.
He did put it back in the back of the net, and it was disallowed. But his goal was fantastic. But Tammy Abraham, unfortunately, with the winning effort, it was removed. This was Villa 6-5, and it was pulled back for offside. And I'm for the life of me, I can't see the offside. It was a goalmouth scramble.
Yeah, no, it wasn't offside. I think Villa were a little bit hard done by there, but yeah, what can you do?
Yeah, well, there's nothing you can do. Yeah. We'll come on to some more officiating decisions because there's some in the next game. But we've got a new feature, haven't we? We've got to give our match balls.
Oh, my gosh.
Away, haven't we? We have three to give away.
Yeah.
For each match. So the math is you do one, I'll do one, and we'll both do one. So for Nottingham Forest, 5-5. I want your player.
Nottingham Forest, 5-5. Is picking Tammy Abraham cheating?
No, I don't think it is.
Then, like, I'd be dumb to pick anybody other than Tammy Abraham. I don't care what you see in a match. If there's five goals and the striker has scored four of them, it's going to Tammy Abraham. Now, if there was a clean sheet, maybe it could have gone to a defender, but there is no way I could justify picking a defender.
No.
So I can explain my decision all I want, but like let's just cut to the chase. Four goals. His finishing was absolutely terrific. It was on fire. Tammy Abraham just basically tapped in every single thing that he got to him. So that's his job. That's what we need in a striker. None of this sort of like feeling unlucky for yourself after every single opportunity that you get. None of that. Tammy Abraham buried every single shot that he took almost. So yeah, it's his.
Mine has to go in that case to Anwar El Ghazi, who came on with little time left and made a real impact, scored a goal to put Villa in the lead. Unfortunately, it wasn't a lead for long, but he made it happen, and certainly I can't look past him for my match ball.
So are we not allowed to pick the same guy? Is that how this works?
Wow, for the third one I was gonna say we give it to Tammy Abraham as well.
Right, okay, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that makes it. You can't not give that third one to him. So two for Tammy, one for Anwar. And I think that is probably the best representation we can do of that feature for this game because no one else is getting one, mate. Not one of them other Villa players is getting. Yannick Bolasie probably has a case. but and John McGinn certainly, but no one stood out like those two.
Yeah, I mean, like, let's look back at the statistics in that game. Actually, you know, it's worth having a quick look, and just kind of like seeing how everybody did. I mean, Tammy Abraham with the four goals, yeah, fair enough to him. Look, Grealish, Bolasie, and Taylor all got assists, but I don't think anybody really sort of blew anybody away with them.
That's
pretty much what I'd have to say as well. If you're not giving it to Abraham, or you're not giving it to El Ghazi, you know, you give it to Bolasie maybe. But
Tammy Abraham takes two awards, and Anwar El Ghazi gets the first.
Yeah.
So I think that's perfect for the Nottingham Forest game, mate. No one else really, really did. You know, if you're giving one to Yannick Bolasie, does it take away from Tammy's or Anwar's? And those two players had more of an impact than him.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, hold your hands up. But 5-5, Nottingham Forest, mad game. There's not a great deal you can take from it because Villa seem to learn their lessons for the next match. But before we get to that, mate, in the middle of the week, it was announced that Villa have signed former defender James Collins on a 5-week contract. Mm. What do you feel?
Oh, it's an interesting one. I don't think I personally don't think he's going to play a game.
It's just there for until Alfie comes back, surely.
Yeah, I think he's there as a... Look, if something horrible goes wrong and both Chester and Tanzibi are out for a game, then Dean Smith might have to put his hands up and go, right, fine, James Bree and James Collins. Or Dominic Revan, who made the bench, by the way, against Nottingham Forest.
Yeah.
And James Collins.
Oh, he made the bench against Middlesbrough.
Sorry, Middlesbrough, yeah.
And Mile Jedinak did as well. And Mile Jedinak had literally just been cleared from injury,
mm-hmm.
like that. So Villa are really weak at centre-back. So the hands have been forced. They've got to give him the 5-week contract.
And Collins, he's been training with Villa now, hasn't he, for a bit? So
he's not an awful defender as well. He's more no-nonsense than, I'd say, Tanzibi and Chester, who like almost to play with the ball at their feet. But not a bad option. Not a bad option.
Yeah, fine. You know, fine. Again, like, what if you need to play in a back three? You know, I wouldn't mind him there as a sweeper. Yeah, I'm cool with it. I suppose it's quite nice as well seeing him back at the club, just because I think there's so many moments where he's won games for us from set pieces. Not in a defensive capacity, but as a, you know, from an attacking capacity. I remember every single corner that we took, James Collins and Richard Dunn would be in there, and you know, though the two of them could have done a lot better defensively for Villa, it was always scary for the opposition seeing them in the box. So I suppose it's quite nice in that sense to see James Collins. I always liked him.
No, I think it's a good option. Suits both parties. A 5-week contract is a bit of a weird deal. I feel like we could have done with signing him perhaps earlier, maybe involving him in some of these behind-the-doors friendlies, getting his match fitness and match prep up, because there's no way he's going to be match fit now or in 5 weeks.
No, of course not.
So, more power to James Collins for owning that contract. And I hope we don't see him, because that will mean one of our defenders has come down. But yeah, seeing him on the bench would be a bit comforting, almost, after what we've been through at defence.
Can I just say as well, just before we move on, I mean, whilst we're talking defensively, if we move on from the Nottingham Forest, you know, before we just move on for it, because I know we're going to a vastly different game in a second. Onyan Island only managed a 4.8 rating on who scored. I don't remember.
He didn't make a single save, mate.
Yeah, I don't remember anybody ever getting that poor a rating for Villa on that website, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know how much faith I put in the ratings, because it's very binary. It seems to say if you got enough stats to show you made a positive performance, then yes, you're going to get a high rating. If you did all right, you're going to get these bland ratings in between. Everyone's going to be the same. There's no difference between anyone. And if you didn't make a save, say if you made one save, mate, it would have been about a 6.7. It'd have been rated. His performance would have been no different.
What's funny to me is, right, Nyland didn't make a single save, right? And we conceded 5. Pantilimon made 6 saves.
Exactly. That's exactly my point. If he makes 6 saves, they still conceded 5.
Okay, true.
And it's 5-5. Maybe they could have, the cases there, that like they could have conceded more. Who knows? But that seems like a pretty deep argument to get involved into.
No, that's fair. That's fair. And final point I want to make on this game is Joe Lolly. You know, he got 4 assists on a goal.
Villa fan at Villa Park, you couldn't wish for better than that, could you, if you're not playing for Villa?
Yeah. So
amazing performance from the man.
Yeah. That's just my final 2 cents on that game. Yeah, whilst we're still talking about bad defending.
Yeah. Well, good defending. Come against Middlesbrough. Villa's next game was against Tony Pulis' side at the Riverside. Now, this is an all-time great Championship defence. This isn't just a hoofball team or a long ball team. It's a structured, disciplined, organised defence. Middlesbrough, before this game, it took them 26 shots against to concede a single goal. They are by far and away the greatest defence in this current Championship, and arguably one of the better defences that the Championship has ever seen. So, of course, nerves heading into this game. It's Tony Pulis, it's Middlesbrough. Villa battered them in a way that was so expected yet unexpected that I still find it hard to digest, and I find it hard to look at the stats. The scattergraph of Middlesbrough, mate, their defence, it's like everyone else is in this little cluster at the bottom, and Middlesbrough are alone at the top, so far away from everyone else in terms of defence and defensive capabilities. A team that can't really finish their dinner up front, but in terms of their defence, mate, there was no way this should have happened, and yet it happened. Villa ran him over.
Nah, listen, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry, Middlesbrough, yeah? But how do you go into a game against a team who's not scored, I mean, who's conceded 7 goals in the last 2 games and not score a single goal? In fact, let's push that away ever so slightly. Not even test Aston Villa. They didn't test Villa, James. They didn't test them. So there is no point having a defense that good in the Championship if you can't finish your dinner, as you put it. Hmm. And you know how I know that? Mm-hmm. Tell me how I know that.
How do you know that?
Because that is exactly what we had last season. We had John Terry at the back alongside James Chester. John Terry still didn't succeed because we could not score. And that is where Middlesbrough are headed at the moment. That is what I see from them after that game last night.
Yeah, they definitely need to find a link to get to their strikers because, boy, it's not good. I think their defence will get them far because it is that good. Their defence is that good. They should stay and at least get them the draws when they should be losing. But, you know, turning those draws into victories, you can only do that if you're scoring. And I will say they are 2 very good chances. One, I believe it was Downing fired into the back of Hugel from point blank range. So that flagged up an offside when that shot should have gone in.
Mm.
And Oyan Neuland came up with a massive, massive fingertip save.
Did he touch that?
Yeah, he touched that onto the bar, mate.
It's hard to tell from the highlights. Yeah.
He definitely, definitely saved that 100%.
I want to get Snicko on that's it. We need Snicko on these things, man. Snicko into football.
But no, Neuland tipped it onto the bar and out of play and got back up to save the next shot as well.
Hmm.
So it seems like, and you know, I think we'll go back in the timeline and start the match again and run over the events. But he had a few issues in this game and I don't think they were on him. Like he came to collect a cross and Tuan Zebe ran into him. That I don't know if that's on Ireland. He could have claimed it better. He could have shouted, but what if he did? And it still happened anyway. I don't know. But that fingertip save, mate, made up for some of his performances in my eyes, really stepped up and when Villa needed.
Yeah, he did, and that showed great character and great resiliency, because it's very easy when you're a goalkeeper and you're conceding a mad amount of goals to just continue score. Just continue conceding a mad amount of goals. That's where Nyland really could have been. It's certainly where I've seen a lot of Villa goalkeepers in the past. Brad Guzan, for example, incredibly talented, one of our most talented goalkeepers in the last decade. But boy, oh boy, when he conceded a clanger, did he continue conceding clangers?
Yeah, for sure. I think goalkeeping's a worrying position. I think all goalkeepers are destined to almost, you know, drop out of performance, you know, that high level of performance. But going back to the start of the match, we'll actually wrap up the match and I'd go through the events in order. I think immediately Villa had a penalty shout. Tammy Abraham was running away from the box, is running out of the box, but George Friend clipped him.
He clipped him.
And a lot of people said it's not a foul because he's running away from the box, but it's a foul in the box and thus a penalty.
Yep.
And it was a penalty, for sure.
Yeah. Although, I mean, if it's not a penalty because he's running away from the box, are you telling me that that's a free kick within the area then? Is that what you're suggesting? Don't be silly.
No, I'm straight up saying that is a penalty.
No, that's what I'm saying. I mean, if people are questioning that, you know, what you're saying is that it should be a free kick in the box, in which case, stop having a laugh. You know, that was a penalty. He stood on his toes, if I remember correctly, his studs went into his shin. It was a penalty any day of the week.
Thankfully, Villa didn't regret it for too long because a corner came in about 2 minutes later. Grealish whips it in. James Chester is the man who hooks it in. Strikers finish. And puts Villa into the lead. Now, this goal is fantastic because this isn't James Chester's goal. This is Ahmed Al-Mohammadi's goal. Al-Mohammadi makes such a good basketball block. Like a basketball assist almost. Just makes that covering block for Chester to make it, lose his marker and run in. And as much as it is Chester making the finish, I think Al-Mohammadi made it happen.
Oh yeah, no, it was good to see him you know, get involved there. And I think in general that was a very well executed set piece. Jack Grealish, you know, put the ball into the right area, and you know what, there was just tons and tons of Villa players in that central area, in that 6 yard box, and it just caused a lot of trouble for Middlesbrough. And I just have to say that it caused me a lot of pleasure to see a Tony Pulis side bullied at a set piece.
Yeah, I think Villa are getting better with their set pieces, especially delivery from Hourihane and Grealish is improving each game.
Definitely. Yeah, they troubled Middlesbrough at pretty much every set piece, and I don't know how. We don't have that many big guys in the team, really, when you consider it, but they're still somehow managing to do it.
Yeah, when Middlesbrough don't have the ball, there's essentially six men at the back. So do you think Middlesbrough were hard done by and should have felt very disappointed to concede that first set piece from that James Chester flick?
Nah, man, that's how they score all their goals. So, look, that's Pulis like scoring from set pieces. I can't count the amount of times that they've won a match from a freaking throw-in, right? Middlesbrough maybe, but Tony Pulis especially, yeah. Right? When the Tony Pulis side concedes a set piece, what do I expect? I expect them to be well-drilled. I expect them to be well-oiled. There are three big guys in that Middlesbrough defense. That defense is nothing to be joked about. You know, let's be real. You know, they've got some terrific players in there. You know, when you've got Danny Batt, Flint, and Fry all in there, you know, you should be winning your set pieces. So I don't have any sympathy for them in that sense.
It was a fantastic goal, and I think they'll be slightly upset at Middlesbrough to have conceded that. They really would have been frustrated with themselves. And Villa went into the half 0-0, well, 1-0 up, sorry. A few worries, though. Again, it was that crossing. Downing was unmarked in the box. There was Hugo was unmarked in the box at one point, and Twanzebe had to put in the challenge to kind of save Downing from cutting it across, because that would have been a certain goal. And the one we've already mentioned that was fired in off Hugo's back for an offside, that would have went in had it not cannoned off their own player. Villa come out 1-0 up, and it took them a while to get going, but when they did, it didn't stop. 2-0, it's another set-piece goal, and I don't know where the line is drawn here, because it still looked like a planned thing, even though it looked like it had fallen apart. Very much so, because all the players stayed in that set-piece position, despite the ball going right back into the field.
Yeah, so my thought when I saw this goal, when I was looking back at the highlights, was we've just done Tony Pulis at a set piece again. Now, it wasn't really a set piece in the traditional sense, but that was three or four passes after a corner. Yeah, the corner didn't go too well. It got headed out, but as you say, James, they stuck around in there. They did not panic and say, right, we're running back to our positions. And essentially neutralizing any attacking effort that we had at that point. But instead, they trusted the team to whip another cross in there. And I have to say, fair play to them for for getting another goal.
So Villa's set piece, one of their routines right now, is a short Jack Grealish pass kind of diagonal across the box to Conor Hourihan, who's running in to take the shot. Conor Hourihan took the shot and it bounced away. And I don't know if it was planned for him to bounce the shot away and then back play it back into Bolasie like they did, because it was perfect. And the players didn't run back to start defending like they would have usually done. So were they counting on Hourihan to have the shot? If it goes in, that's great. If it doesn't go in, stay in position. It's like it was all perfectly planned out for Hourihan to miss his shot, essentially. The ball bounced back, and then they play it in, and it sounds ridiculous, but looking at it, those players were still on their marks. They weren't moving. They were waiting for it.
That's what I wonder. And is it, have I heard correctly that Villa are bringing in or have brought in a set-piece coach?
It would be likely the little bloke from Brentford who advised England,
yeah,
that England set up on the World Cup. And that'll be amazing
that
because they're doing some... It seems like it would be going ahead at this point, yeah.
Right.
Imagine that.
Yeah, no, I think, well, it just shows you how important Dean Smith sees set pieces as a traditional play the ball across the floor manager.
And, mate, that I can't get this out of my head, this second goal. I still don't know if it was improvised or planned out. Because it certainly looked very planned out.
Why don't you watch it back, man?
I've watched it back five or six times. And the first time I thought, oh, it's improvised. The more I watch it, the more I think it's planned.
I'm gonna look for it. Okay. Right. So essentially what happened was Grealish. So wait, so there was the free kick first of all, wasn't there? Right?
Yeah.
So it was actually a corner, right? Hourihan's passed it straight down to Grealish. Grealish has got it running at the box. Hourihan has almost done this full sort of 90-degree movement where he's run from the corner flag around Jack Grealish. Yeah, as you say, he's hit the shot. It's a very, very tame shot. I think what he was trying to do there was to get that ball to trickle along there so that somebody else could give it a bigger whack. I think that's what Hourihan was trying to do there. But
it's still. Was he planning to do that?
I don't know. I don't know. But what I will say is that Yannick Bolasie did a very, very good job of being in the right position there. He kept himself totally open, and that's how I think it was. John McGinn, you know, the way that he was able to pinpoint Yannick Bolasie there was fantastic. And yeah, just good to see such a pinpoint cross from Bolasie in the end. Brilliant.
And the way Bolasie crosses in, it's like pinpoint and perfect, as you said. Because if Abraham doesn't sweep that in, Al-Ghazi's going to sweep it in.
Well, that's the thing. When you drill it at that pace, all you need is a touch.
Yeah, and there's two people there on standby just waiting for it. Planned to perfection. Villa's second goal, amazing. But I tell you what, credit has to go for Villa's third goal. What a fantastic strike that was from Glenn Whelan. A lot of... he's been on the pitch all of a minute. His first touch is a goal. Scott Hogan is running at Middlesbrough like there's no tomorrow, and he looks like he's going to score. His shot is parried by Randolph, and it falls to Hourihan. He takes a touch, brings it back for Whelan, who strikes it first time with a fair bit of backspin, and it hits the palms of Randolph and goes straight in.
Well, look, it's nice to see. It's nice to see. He likes a good first-time shot. Is that I'm right in remembering that he hit it first time, didn't he? Or am I wrong?
That's his first touch of the game.
Yeah,
yeah.
You might remember another famous first touch goal from Glenn Whelan when the Republic of Ireland took on Italy years ago.
Yes,
it almost reminded me of that. He struck it with the same sort of confidence, didn't he? Randolph should be doing a lot better there. Randolph should be doing a lot better, but you know what? When you strike the ball powerfully like that, you never know, do you? You know, he's bought a ticket of the lottery, and yeah, he struck it so powerfully. Randolph's not expecting to shoot it from there, and inevitably he's fumbled it. Just good to see that from Whelan. Just good to see it.
He gets done over a bit, doesn't he, the keeper? Because the shot goes through someone's legs, so he's seeing that as it's halfway through the box, and it's got these shots. It's like a knuckleball shot. It's not moving in the air. All the kinetic energy is released when it makes contact. So when it hits his palms, it starts spinning. It's gone.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? I'm not sure what I think of Whelan at this point. I think he's doing what he's supposed to be doing at this point. I think he's
working fantastic for Villa at this point.
He's a good option. And I think that's what he is in the team. He's brilliant. You know, he's a good leadership figure, right? I don't think he should be starting. You know, he shouldn't be our first choice central midfielder. But he's doing a good job of being a good option. And
fantastically, it's like having RoboCop in the middle.
RoboCop,
just like laying down the law.
Well, at times, by the book. I think he's more effective when you want to shut a game down later on. You know, later on in the game, I think the game can go ahead of him or get ahead of him. Sorry, just slightly when you get him on the pitch for 90 minutes. We've seen that happen. He doesn't quite have the legs for it at this level anymore. But you know, it's good to see that he thought positively at that point and struck the ball, because he could have very easily taken that and sideways passed that and thought, you know what, we're two goals ahead. You know, let me do my job as a defensive midfielder. Let's just keep a hold of it. And it was good to see that goal.
So, yeah, the three goals for Villa, Glenn Whelan, amazing. Bolasie's crossing to Abraham, spectacular. And of course, that first goal by James Chester, always coming and well deserved and well needed. Of course, Chester's coming for a bit of stick. So, Trevor Hood again suggested the feature. Our executive producer, Trevor Hood, suggested the feature of the match balls. We're going to have to give three away again. I'll give one first. You give the second one. We'll come together for the third. My match ball, I'm going to give it to Yannick Bolasie.
Yannick Bolasie. No, that's fair. I like that because,
he made things happen, mate. Well, he was dancing all over the pitch really well. Got the assist, always looked dangerous, and grew into the game. I think he did a really good job against Middlesbrough.
In your opinion, what made him better than every other Villa player on the pitch?
Creativity, spark going forward, a bit of dynamism. I don't know if it's a negative that he didn't track back as much as Amwal Alghazi. Alghazi did a lot of good work in defence. It was hard to pick between the pair, but I think Bolasie stayed up enough to stay positive. He worked hard and really looked to spur it. You know, I don't know if he weren't playing, I don't know if Villa would have done the same thing.
No, that's fair. I like that. I wonder who I would give it to. I really struggle with this one, to be fair.
There's a lot of people you could.
Oh, of course, there is a lot of people to go to here. Tammy Abraham did a good job again, didn't he? I'm going to give it to Jack Grealish. I just think he did his job so well as an attacking midfielder. I thought Villa attacked through the central quite a lot. And I think that is very much down to Jack Grealish. I think he did a tremendous job in there. Essentially, you know, and his cross for the corner was good. His role in the second goal again was brilliant. You know, the way that he executed his responsibilities from that set piece, yeah, it was top quality. And I just thought he played a good game. So I'm going to give it to Jack Grealish.
So the third one, we'll bring our heads together for a vote. You could say Glenn Whelan, you could say Scott Hogan, you could say Amwal Alghazi. They all had really bright spells when they came on, all played during the match. I'm going to say Conor Hourihan.
I don't know if I can agree with you there, man. I thought John McGinn almost did a better job in central midfield, but what makes you say Hourihan?
Because I think his position has been a difficult one for him to adapt to. I think it was definitely his strongest game in that defensive midfield position. He looked like he bossed it. And he certainly was a threat from set pieces. A bit of ingenuity there. Looked to be the mind behind them all. I don't know. John McGinn?
I'll give it John McGinn because...
Should we say John McGinn?
Yeah, I guess so. So are we basically just going for a number three here that we can both sort of agree on?
Is that yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah, look, so if it's between Grealish, McGinn and Bolasie, interesting one. Yeah, let's give it to somebody else. I'm saying McGinn because he's come back and clearly we were missing him. Clearly we were missing him in that midfield. And he's come back and he's helped us control things. And I have to give it to him for that. And I thought also the way that he pinpointed Yannick Bolasie for that second goal was fantastic. But I just have to say, you know, the way that he was combating in midfield, I thought that was the most important thing. And I thought both him and Hooran, it could be either of them, played really, really well to control things in there, especially when Middlesbrough are generally very good at doing that themselves. But
yeah, I think you could have easily give it to Al Ghazi, Hooran, and McGinn. You know, loads of people could have took that
for match. I think I'll go with Hooran because you said it first, and I think that is fair. And purely because of the fact that he got the assist out of the two of them.
Okay, so we'll go for the Middlesbrough vote, the match board, the men of the match, to Hourihane, Bolasie, and Jack Grealish. And I think that's fair. I think Amal Al-Ghazi may feel a bit left out, but I really think Bolasie showed him up there. I think he looked really good. Hourihane looked boss, and even though it was a quiet game for Jack Grealish, he still managed to find his way of running the show.
Yeah, he did, and I genuinely, again, it's just again seeing his stats and saying 2 goals and 2 assists, it just is not representative of what he does for the team. Is not representative of it at all. That corner where obviously Chester scored from, that's not going to count as his assist. It just isn't. But having said that, he created that, and he was really, really important in creating that second goal as well. Again, I have to say honorable mentions to Tammy Abraham, who did his job in finishing, and also James Chester did a good job at the back as well.
Nolan to come up with the big save. There's a lot of people who, everyone kind of stood up for themselves. Twanzebe, some shaky moments with Nolan, but he cut out a few important attacking passes. So yeah, I'm pretty happy with that. Shall we move on to the big derby then on the weekend? Well, not even on the weekend. It's on Friday.
It is Friday. It's a Friday night game. Yeah.
Yeah, so West Brom take on Aston Villa in the West Midlands derby. First one since Villa went down in 2016. So,
tough game.
I don't know how to feel about this one.
Tough game. West Brom are on a roll. They're playing very, very well at the moment. They're on the back of three wins. And they're not just any wins. You know, they've got the win, the 4-1 win against Leeds United. After that, obviously comfortable away win against Ipswich. Again, you know, always difficult to go on the road twice in a row. But they did it. They went over to Swansea, 2-1 victory over them as well. And also, just worth saying as well, they're scoring quite a few goals this season. West Brom, they've scored 41 from their 19 games. That's pretty good. That's over 2 goals a game. I have to say that they're looking pretty dangerous.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've played, and Villa haven't beaten West Brom since that FA Cup tie all those years ago, when a few people ran on the pitch, and I think that was the one that got them to the semi-final. That was 2-0. They beat him in the Premier League the same week, the last minute Benteke penalty, that long ago. So it has been a while since Villa and Baggies have played, but Baggies seem to be on the on the up and up. Mm. But so do Villa, and they're both scoring a lot of goals. So I think we're due for a good 0-0 in this one.
Yeah, well, I don't know, man. I don't know. No, I disagree with you because I don't know if you're being serious or not. But
I don't know. I don't know what if I'm being serious.
Look, there's a lot of in-form players in that West Bromwich Albion team who are banging them in. Dwight Gayle scored 9. Jay Rodriguez has scored 9. You know, Craig Dawson's been looking good as well. Fair play to him. You know, in the last couple of games. Matt Phillips again as well. 5 goals this season, 5 assists. You know, he's been man of the match in 3 games. And let's not even forget young Harvey Barnes on loan from Leicester City, who's just put in an incredibly strong advert for himself, an incredibly marketable advert for himself in the Championship this season at 20 years of age, 7 goals and 3 assists. And I think he's almost going unnoticed to some degree. But Leicester City have a real player on their hands, and West Bromwich Albion are nurturing him.
Yeah, it certainly looks like they've got some goal scorers. Rodriguez, Gayle, Barnes. Villa are kind of lacking in the goal scorers. A lot is coming through Abraham at the moment, and you know, no small part to the 4 goals he scored in the week. But James Chester and Jonathan Codger back up Abraham. So James Chester being there ahead of others is a bit of a worry for me. Good to see that we've got a defender scoring, but we need more goals from the flanks. I know Bolasie has a few, and I know Grealish has a few, but they need to start picking up the pace a bit with these goals.
Yeah, you say that, but I think it owes a lot to the way that we play. Our wingers never cut inside, or rarely cut inside, rarely seem to cut inside. I think they almost do their job kind of as providers. And I think that's why Tammy Abraham's been so prolific. And Jonathan Codger as well recently, as of late, you know, when he has almost played as an inside forward, has done quite well. And also, it's also testament to the midfielders. You know, Jack Grealish, Conor Hourihan, John McGinn, all chipping in with goals from that midfield. And Villa seem to be very much a narrow side when it comes to scoring goals. And I don't think we can really have too much of a go at the wingers for that.
No, I think Villa have the form going into this. West Brom have won their last three. But before that, there was a draw and a loss. So they went three games without winning, whilst Villa have went the five games since their last loss against QPR. Very similar teams, points, only three separates them. Goal difference, only five goals separate them. Villa have conceded three more than West Brom. West Brom has scored two more than Villa. They've won two more games. We've both lost the same. We've drawn a few more games. We've got a game in hand, the coming game on Monday against Brentford, where we'll learn a lot. I think Dean Smith will learn a lot from that. West Brom playing Brentford of all teams. So it's going to be too close to call. And I did joke about the 0-0. I think irony will happen. You know, there's a big case for irony here. Two freely scoring teams, two similarly matched teams, two open teams that can't seem to defend against teams creating chances. Teams that can't really protect a good lead without scoring more goals. Two good finishing teams, two good counter-attacking teams, two good attacking, two teams you can attack and score set pieces, two teams that use the wings, two teams that seem to be in really good form, two teams that score a lot of goals. It's all on the cards for a high-scoring match. But again, the case for irony has to be made. This could be the perfect 0-0.
I can see it. I can see it. I know what you're saying. But having said that, this is the kind of game, I believe, where one of us is going to capitulate. I genuinely feel that way. I think either us or West Bromwich Albion are going to capitulate. I just see one side scoring a goal and grabbing the game by the scruff of its neck. I hope it's us. Our form has been pretty strong. We've got four wins in the last five games. Is it going to come to an end now? That's the worry. I think when you look at it, James, we've scored 12 goals in the last three games. In fact, scrap that, we've scored 15 in the last four. I think that's a very strong return. I want to see that continue. So for that very reason, I am going to go with a 4-0 victory.
To Aston Villa?
Yeah.
Bloody hell, that's a strong call.
I'm playing to win this thing.
I'm going to go with a 3-3 draw between Albion and Villa.
Oh, interesting. That's what I picked for Middlesbrough.
Yeah, and you were wrong.
Do you know what's funny? Right? Look at the last few results for Villa. How the heck, Trevor Hood, Trevor, this is a shout out to you, right? Yeah, I'm sending for you right now. How do you expect us to guess any of the results?
It's impossible from here on out.
It is, isn't it, James? It is. It's impossible.
It's impossible. 3-3, I think, is a fair one. 4-0 could happen. Away at Baggies. It's going to be a tough one. It's one I can't predict. And again, it's probably going to be 0-0.
Yeah, but I could also quite easily see it being 4-1 Albion. There's no reason to suggest it wouldn't be. Dwight Gayle likes to punish us every time we play against him. I'm pretty sure he does anyway. And Jay Rodriguez is in good form. It's the kind of game where somebody like Harvey Barnes is going to take it by the scruff of the neck, you know, at home against Villa in a local derby, one that they seem to care about a lot more than we do. It's all there. Everything is there for it to be a thrashing for either side, genuinely. I can't see us locking horns.
It's going to be rough, isn't it? It's going to be rough to predict.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll tell you what, I think it's going to be even more fiery than the Blues game.
Yeah, because we're competing for stuff. Blues were just there.
Yeah.
This is a promotion battle.
Yeah.
This could end up being the playoff final.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's the first time as well. It's the first time in years where both teams have been level in terms of their sort of, I won't say size, but in terms of their actual footballing level, isn't it?
Yeah, very similar teams, very similar form. There's a lot going for this. I think it's fair. I guess we'll finish on that note then. Really looking forward to this game.
Yeah, listen, it's the biggest Villa Albion game in years. In years, honestly. And I think this will be for more bragging rights than any of the games in the Premier League were.
Oh, yeah, for sure. This is a proper derby coming up.
Yeah.
I mean, could get fiery. I'm hoping for some turnaround. I'm hoping Villa bring the game. I hope it's more like the 4-1 win over Wolves than the return fixture when we succumbed at Molineux. But I really hope Villa can go back to the Black Country, get a massive win. This will be a massive win at the Hawthorns. And take those bragging rights home, because it's more important. It's a massive statement. This is West Brom, a favourite, one of the favourites to go up. West Brom are one of the best teams in this league. Villa, if Villa smash them to pieces, you're not just looking at Villa scraping into the playoffs or winning the playoffs. You're looking at Villa contending to be champions of this league. No joke. If Villa smash, go there, smash Albion, you're looking at the champions.
Look, we've been talking about these three. We've been talking about these big fixtures coming up. We said the next six. Right, so far it's 2 out of 2. Right, 2 down, 4 to go. If we can get 4 positive results, you know, out of these fixtures, then you know, perfect. You know, we take it a game at a time. Hopefully, we get a win over Albion. All I can say is, it's going to be a struggle. The next 4 games, there's going to be times where we're going to look on the back foot. Don't know if I can see us winning every single game in that run that we've got coming for us. You know, we've still got Stoke to play. We've still got Leeds to play. I would really like us to continue that form right now so that we don't drop any momentum.
If Villa can beat Stoke, beat Leeds and beat Baggies, or at least go without losing in those 3 games and cushion it with 2 wins, then help, you know, that's a massive statement. That's an incredible statement to this league. Because, you know, Villa have beat Derby. Villa beat the favoured team. Then they beat the other favoured team in Middlesbrough. They beat Swansea as well. Swansea, no, you're not doing that bad at all. They're having their struggles, but they're still a good team, good, strong team, playing good football at points. They've got Leeds. Leeds are a bit different. I think Leeds play very well occasionally, can drop the standards because there are such high standards put upon them by Marcelo Bielsa. I don't think they can keep up throughout the season. But we'll have to see. I think... certainly that has to start with a win against Albion. You win against Albion, you beat Stoke, the world's at their feet. Suddenly, all of a sudden, heading into that Leeds game. I'm really excited. Really, really excited for this.
Yeah, so am I, man. So am I. Listen, December, it's going to be tough. You know, we're still struggling. We still don't quite have that defence that we want. Let's see this through. Let's see this through as well as we can up until January. That's when things will start coming together, in my opinion. But I think for now, we need to make sure we're at least in the mix.
Yeah, for sure. So thanks for coming on, Danny.
Oh, I love it, man.
We'll catch up after the Baggies game. Thanks for your prediction, the match balls and all that. We'll see what happens. But I guess that's it for the podcast this week, man.
Yeah, defo, man. Listen, this has been one of my favourite weekends of sport in such a long time. It's been crazy. It's been crazy this week as a Villa fan. Let's not, you know, end this podcast without just acknowledging that. You know, five-all draw. That is something new. That is something new. We are not used to seeing Villa going glove for glove with a side like that. You know, one of the previous Villa sides would have absolutely laid down during that match. But you know what? Right, it's exactly the same. You're getting exactly the same amount of points as you would have gotten for a 0-0. And for that, I can't complain. If we're going to have more 5-alls than 0-0s, I honestly don't mind. we've been saying this for a while. The reason why Villa are doing so well under Dean Smith is because he's acknowledged the fact that our defense isn't that strong. So let's just score more than the opposition. So great seeing Villa score 8 goals this week. And secondly, I want to say that it was great seeing Fury last night in the boxing. That was fantastic to see as a sports fan. And also all the derbies this weekend were terrific. If you're a fan of the Premier League, if you're a fan of football, you cannot complain about the week of sport we've had. Let's just hope it continues next week.
So you can find him at DH. Oh, no, it's not even. Sorry, it's at Raza Jerno.
He's done it. I've done it.
You can find him at Raza Jerno. You can find me at Jammy Rushden and find us at all together at 7500 to Holt. Yeah, definitely Raza Jerno for him. And we'll see you after the Baggies game next Sunday, hopefully with a positive outlook heading into the next run of fixtures. We'll see you soon, guys. Goodbye.